When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
It's time to play like a Jet
with your host, Scott Mason.
Play like a Jet. What does that mean?
Garrett Wilson. Wow! What a catch! Touchdown, Jets! That kid's amazing. Gibson on the return. Near side. I don't see any flags. Gibson inside the 30. Hits the Jets. And he's going to go! Jets win it! Touchdown, rookie Xavier Gibson. Game over.
Allen has time. Intercepted. Sauce Gardner's got it, Allen. Tripped up. He could not get past Jermaine Johnson. Oh, look at the speed of Breece Hall. He's done it again. Breece lightning. 62 yards for the touchdown.
And he's sacked again by Quinnen Williams. What a beast, number 95 for the Jets.
Listen. Thank you.
This is Play Like a Jet. My name is Scott Mason. You can follow me on Twitter at @PlayLikeJet1. And we are going to recap day number one of the 2024 NFL Draft. A day with some twists and turns, to say the least. Some surprises, some that were not a surprise. And so to talk about all of it, including, of course, what the Jets did with their pick in the first round, my good buddy Glenn Naughton, who is the editor over at Jet Nation, and also our buddy Nick Faria, who covers the Jets for Athlon Sports and also covers the NFL for Pro Football Network. Glenn, Nick, good to have both of you on. Glenn, you did a live stream for over 4 hours. You have got to be exhausted.
Yeah, you know, I didn't even realize it went that long, to be honest. It went fairly quick because you're constantly talking. I was even worried a little bit, like, you know, between picks, are we going to have enough to talk about? And, you know, you can go back to previous picks. Like, we got a lot of mileage out of that Michael Penix pick, I'll tell you that. that was coming up 15 picks later. We still couldn't believe it. So, we did the full 4 hours, and it was a good time. We enjoyed it, and we were happy you were able to come over and join us for a little bit.
And, Nick, you had a long ride to Florham Park, and you have a long ride back, but at least they took care of you in the food department, I understand.
Oh, yeah, chicken parm, some penne, these giant chocolate chip cookies. Jets, the Jets kitchen treats us very well.
So I guess what you're telling us is that they are grooming the beat reporters for the Jets to become the next group of offensive linemen with all that food they're feeding you.
Listen, I don't think they need to worry about that anymore now with Olufoshano being the pick.
Yeah, so let's talk about that, and we'll get into the rest of what happened in the draft here after we talk about the Jets, because this is a Jets podcast. This was crazy. Daniel Jeremiah comes on TV right as the Jets are coming up on the clock, and he says, I'll tell you what I would do here. I would call the Vikings, and I would tell them, we're getting all these offers. Teams want to jump you for J.J. McCarthy. Either give us some picks to move back a spot, or we're going to trade with somebody that wants J.J. McCarthy and let them steal your guy. And he said that he knows that playbook because he remembers when he and Joe Douglas worked together in Baltimore and the Ravens really wanted Haloti Ngata. And I can't remember the team that was right ahead of them, but they knew it. So they called the Ravens and said, look, we're getting teams calling about Haloti Ngata. We're going to trade the pick to one of them unless you give us a pick to move up. So the Ravens did it. It was a bluff, but it didn't matter. The Ravens were fine because they got their guy, and Haloti Ngata ended up being a really, really good player. Obviously, if J.J. McCarthy ends up being a franchise quarterback, the Vikings are not going to care that they gave up what they did, which was a fourth rounder and a fifth rounder, and they got back the sixth rounder that the Jets got the other day in the Zach Wilson deal from Denver. So the Jets move back from 10 to 11, pick up an extra fourth, pick up an extra fifth, and they draft Olufoshano, the tackle out of Penn State. Now, it's funny because early on in the draft process, a lot of people thought that Fashanu might be the top tackle in the class. There were people that thought he could go top five. But then, as we know happens a lot, as the process got going, we started hearing more about some of his flaws. Some of these other guys jumped him. And it ended up that a lot of people had him on that next tier of tackle. Most people thought Joe Alt was the top guy. And then after that, there was a huge difference of opinion between a lot of people as to what the rankings of the tackles were. But going into this, the prevailing thought here was that the Jets might get aggressive and try to trade up for Neighbors or Harrison, or that they really would have liked Odunze or Bowers at number 10. Now, they ended up going to 11, but ultimately, once they got there, the only one of that group that was available to them was Brock Bowers. Rome Odunze went at number 9 to the Bears. And Nick, I'll let you talk about this in a little bit. I'm going to bring Glenn in first, but I know there's buzz that the Jets tried to move up. I don't know if it was for Neighbors or Harrison, probably was. I'm sure they also tried to move up to number 8. I assume that would be for Rome Odunze, because by that point, Harrison and Neighbors were gone, and so was Joe Alt. But in the end, they couldn't get a deal done, so they slide back a little bit from 10 and get Olu Fashanu. Now, I have my reservations about this pick, and Glenn, we've talked about this many times. The reason I don't love it is not that I don't think Fashanu is a good player. I think he's a good tackle. I don't think he's a great tackle necessarily. He has played very well at Penn State the last 2 years, by and large. 20 games started, didn't give up any sacks, but he did get bullied around more than you would have liked to have seen against the top competition in the Big Ten last year, especially against Michigan and Ohio State. That's something that is a little bit alarming. Now, the year before that, if Fashanu had been available in the draft, there are people that think he could have been the top tackle, but you can't just wave away 2023 and what we saw and the concerns that come with that. However, my main concern is that the Jets are in a very short win now window with Aaron Rodgers. Every year they have him has to be considered possibly his last year. They drafted a guy in Fashanu who, while very talented, is going to start the season as a backup unless somebody gets hurt. And my thought is that's an asset that you could have used on somebody to help you right now, as opposed to somebody who may or may not play at all in 2024. And if he does, you don't know how much it's going to be. Could have signed a veteran to take that role. What the Jets are probably thinking here is that they looked at the tackles that were available where they were. They looked at the weapons. And once Odunze went off the board, they thought there was a steep drop-off. It sounds like the Bowers stuff was smoke. They were never really interested. If that's what happened and the Jets looked at it and said, okay, we have Fashanu rated well ahead of Bowers or the other receivers that are available once Odunze went off the board, we picked up this extra fourth-round pick. Now we have ammo to jump up into the second round and get a receiver we really like there who we don't think is that different than the guys that are available after Odunze. I sort of understand it. I still don't love the idea of picking a guy at number 11 who is more of a long-term play than a short-term play. I would have liked a combination. We saw that with Will McDonald last year. Everybody acknowledged that he had a ton of upside and could be a really good edge rusher, but that he probably wasn't going to play a lot in 2023, which ended up being the case. That could very well be what happens with Olu Fashanu. But in the end, the Jets do get a guy who hopefully should help fortify that offensive line going forward, even if he's not necessarily going to be a starter in year number one. If they pair that tomorrow with an impact pass catcher, then overall, from a big picture standpoint, if you're a Jets fan, you'll end up being fairly happy with the fact that they got two guys at the two spots that everybody thought they really needed the most. So Glenn, I'll start with you. Your thoughts on the Olu Fashanu pick here, and of course, the Jets moving from 10 to 11.
Yeah, you know, nothing against the player. Just like you said, you know, highly rated guy that everybody loved. And he was, you know, there, as you mentioned, there were a lot of folks last year who felt if he'd come out after last season, he would have been the top guy off the board. Now, the term I've used umpteen times, you know, many times over in discussing the approach I thought the Jets should take this year, for all the reasons you outlined, the short window, the Aaron Rodgers, you know, treating every year like it's his last. I've said a million times, you've got to get a day one impact player. The Jets obviously disagreed. It surprises. And I said, I won't be mad if they take a good player. However, if it's not a day one impact guy, I'll be a little confused. And what I mean by that is every single move we've seen from the Jets this offseason points to a one-year win-now situation. Everybody they've brought in is a one-year deal, or they have one. I think, if I'm not mistaken, Moses has 1 year left on his deal. They brought Smith in for 1 year. They brought Javon Kinlaw in for 1 year. Simpson got two, but that's the longest deal they gave out. So every single thing they've done up to this point suggests we're going to try to win it this year. If you're doing that, you should be bringing in, in my opinion, you should be bringing in help that's going to help you this year. Now, of course, we expect that Olufoshana will play a little bit this year. Well, I shouldn't even say a little bit. We expect he's going to play. We don't know how much. We don't know if he's going to play 2 games, 5 games, 10 games, 15 games. We'll know that at the end of the year. If that happens, yeah, of course you'll be, you know, I'll feel a lot better about the pick. But my take all along has been add a day one impact starter and then go out into free agency and sign, you know, as we've talked about, Scott, a Donovan Smith, a Cam Fleming, somebody who has been a you know, solid veteran. You're not going to get a Pro Bowl or all pro type. But when you traded for Aaron Rodgers, that, you know, part of the reason you're so happy to get that guy, not just he's a Hall of Famer, but because of his style of play, the way he's able to get rid of the ball so quickly, you feel like, all right, if we don't have an all-pro line, you can still win with Aaron Rodgers because his style of play allows that. But now we've gone from that to we've got to have an all-pro at every position or otherwise Aaron Rodgers can't succeed. So there's been sort of a shift for some people with what you need to win with Aaron Rodgers. I get wanting to protect him. That's why you bring in Smith. That's why you bring in Moses. And I've said all along, take a tackle outside of round one and sign a Donovan Smith or a Fleming or a Charles Leno or whoever. Because it's not only the fact that it's not a day one impact starter. It's the fact that, let's say Smith does get hurt, which he probably will. And let's say it's early. Let's say it's week 2 or 3 or 4, which has happened to him in the past. You've now got a hope, and I get that Fashanu's a very high performer, very high ceiling. You expect him to be a very good player for many years. But a lot of college tackles struggle early on. You look at Penei Sewell just got a $1 billion contract. He was pretty bad his first 8 games. He gave up 4 sacks. He gave up over 20 hits. Andrew Thomas with the Giants was not a good player early on. So you've now gone out, used pick 11 on a guy who may or may not play. And when he does, if he struggles, everything else you've done kind of falls apart because you don't have a tackle getting the job done. Whereas, yes, like I said, Charles Leno, Cam Fleming, these guys aren't superstars, but they're veterans who have played good enough football that you could feel good about them protecting Aaron Rodgers and Aaron Rodgers being able to operate the offense. So I don't dislike the player. The approach is confusing. I do love the fact that you moved down one spot. You picked up a couple extra picks. And now, yes, they will likely use those picks to move up and grab a receiver. That's the hope on our part anyway. A lot of guys came off the board, but you do still have Ladd McConkey. You do have Malachi Corley. I don't know how high the Jets can go with what they've got, you know, a 3 and a few 4s. I don't know if those get you in the range to get one of those guys, but there's still some names out there. There's still a chance to upgrade the position. They did get a good football player who is going to play a vital role for years to come, but he's not the day one impact guy that I was hoping for.
Glenn, we'll get into it a little bit more when we talk about who the best players still on the board are. But I will say, I think the fact that they traded down from 10 to 11 eased my concerns a little bit. Again, Olufoshinu, good player, and hopefully he helps fortify a spot on that offensive line for years to come. And hopefully he doesn't have to play much this year, because that would mean that Morgan Moses or Tyron Smith got hurt, and we don't want that to happen. But if he ends up fortifying a spot on that line for the next bunch of years, then in the end, it'll be a good pick. It's just like you said, the approach is a little confusing. But if it's paired with the Jets taking the gains that they got in that trade down with Minnesota and moving into the second round, getting very aggressive and getting one of those receivers that we think could be an impact player day one, then it becomes a lot more clear what Joe Douglas was thinking. He might have been thinking, okay, I can get Olufoshinu here. He's much better than any offensive lineman I could get trading up into round two. But after Rome Odunze went off the board, I feel like there are wide receivers that I could get in round number two that are comparable to the ones that I could get here, and I don't want to take Brock Bowers. If that's what he was thinking, then it makes sense, especially if he carries this through and does something on day number two. And Nick, I want to bring you in here because you were at the press conference and you asked Joe Douglas about this, and he gave you an answer that provided what could be some clarity, because there's been a lot of smoke screens, so never take anything just at face value. But talk to me a little bit about your initial reaction being there covering this with Olufoshinu, what the Jets said. It sounds like the Jets would have liked to have gotten one of those wide receivers or Joe Alt or J.C. Latham. And once they weren't able to do that, the fallback plan was what they ended up doing, which is not a terrible fallback plan. But in the end, they didn't get any of the receivers. They didn't get Alt or Latham. They get themselves Fashanu, who they hope is a building block, some extra picks, which I think they probably hope can help them get that receiver that they couldn't land on day number one, or at least somebody that's somewhat comparable to what they could have gotten once Odunze went off the board. Talk a little bit about the press conference and everything that went down being there at Florham Park tonight.
Well, yeah, and I'll start with this. I received a text message right when our show started here detailing what exactly the Jets' plan was going into the draft. And the one thing that I have heard, and has since been posted by Connor Hughes at SNY, the Jets did everything they could to try and trade up into the top 10 to select a receiver. They were going after a receiver, really, really trying to push for it. But they were kind of victims of circumstance. You know, the top three quarterbacks went right away, 1, 2, and 3, Drake May, Jaden Daniels, and Caleb Williams. Marvin Harrison went 4. But with the Chargers staying at 5 and taking Joe Alt, that really altered their overall plans, because I think they were hoping Minnesota would trade up for J.J. McCarthy, at least at top 5, not into 10. And essentially what happened was that pushed Malik Nabers to 6. It pushed Romeo Odunze to the 8 or 9 spot. And when Atlanta essentially stated that they were not going to trade out and select Michael Penix, it was a shockwave that was sent throughout the rest of the draft board, because it essentially screwed the Jets out of Romeo Odunze, because he was always the guy that the Bears were going to take. They were not taking another offensive lineman. And when Atlanta said they were taking Penix, that essentially sealed the Jets' fate. So they pivoted to the next available guy, and the next available guy was Olufoshinu. And I understand people have reservations about him, but being able to add draft picks, you look at the overall value. When I talked to Joe Douglas today after the selection, I asked him point blank, is this enough capital to trade into the second round? And he kind of gave me the side answer of like, yeah, all these added assets are going to help. It allows us to be versatile. But the message that I got from them was that they are still going to be very aggressive getting into the second round and potentially taking a high impact player. And this was kind of what I was predicting from the beginning. I felt going in, and I was one of the few that thought the offensive line would have been a better overall value for the Jets. I also thought it would be in a trade back a little bit deeper, picking up a second round pick. But I thought getting an offensive lineman in the first round was going to be very helpful, because I knew the running back, the lineman class was going to be picked apart in this first round. And it absolutely was. Barton, Guyton, all these guys go in the later rounds, late 20s. And it, essentially, it's allowing a lot of these top receivers, who a lot of people had them going in the first round, they are falling now into the second round. There were first round grades I've heard from people on Malachi Corley, on Ladd McConkey, and now they're going to go to the second round. There's going to be teams that are interested in drafting them. So maybe the Jets try to get into the late second round spot, but there are going to be plenty of offensive weapons for the Jets to choose from if they want to get aggressive, and it certainly sounds like they will be.
Play like a Jet. Play like a Jet.
Nick, let's talk a little bit now about what happened in the top 10 here in this draft, because it went pretty much exactly how you expected for a bit. And then things turned a little bit, and it got a little bit weird. And you and Glenn both alluded to exactly what happened before. So let's get into it. We talked about the Jets getting Olufoshinu at number 11 after trading down. Number one, Caleb Williams, the quarterback out of USC to Chicago. No surprise, everybody's known that since before the season ended last year, pretty much. Washington goes with Jaden Daniels. There was some talk for a little while that maybe Drake May would be the pick, but the last couple of weeks it has seemed more and more that Jaden Daniels was a lock. Drake May goes number three to the Patriots. There was some talk the Patriots might consider moving out of the spot or that they like J.J. McCarthy. I never in a million years believed they would ever take J.J. McCarthy over Drake May, and they didn't. So Drake May goes there at number three. Marvin Harrison Jr. goes to the Cardinals at four. There was some buzz that they might want to move out of that pick and that they might even consider moving down and then moving back up. Instead, they decide not to get cute, and they take Marvin Harrison Jr. at four. Everybody expected that. The Chargers, there was debate as to whether or not they would trade the pick. A lot of people thought that they would move out. In fact, a lot of NFL Network people were reporting before the draft that the Chargers were the most likely team to move out of the top 10. They didn't. They stayed at five. And Daniel Jeremiah was right about this. People said, look, they need a receiver. They could go with Bowers. There's a bunch of different directions they could go in. But what does Jim Harbaugh like to do? He likes to play tough, physical football. He wants to bully people. And so he's going to want an offensive lineman. Joe Alt from Notre Dame ends up being the guy. I thought it might be J.C. Latham out of Alabama. Rashawn Slater is a left tackle. Latham would have fit in nicely at right tackle. But either way, they went tackle, and it was Joe Alt at number six. Malik Nabers goes to the Giants. There was some buzz about them and J.J. McCarthy. I never believed that either. I think they were trying to bluff somebody into trading up, probably Minnesota. In the end, they take Nabers. For the Giants, I felt like the best move here was either Nabers or a trade down. Then at number seven, Tennessee Titans were going to go with the best offensive tackle on their board. That's what they did. They went with J.C. Latham at number seven. It was more or less going to be Alt goes five, Latham goes seven, or Latham goes five, Alt goes seven. It ends up Alt five, Latham seven. Then the stunner, Michael Penix Jr., goes to the Falcons at eight. This one made no sense to me. I'm not super high on Michael Penix Jr. as a prospect anyway, but he's 24 years old. He's had two torn ACLs, and he's going to sit behind Kirk Cousins for at least a year, maybe more than that. The thing that's crazy about this, too, is they were reporting that Kirk Cousins didn't find out about this until the Falcons were on the clock. I just can't wrap my head around the fact that you would pay all this money for Kirk Cousins, and like a month later, you're drafting his replacement, and you don't even tell him about it until right before you do it. Everybody was shaken by that particular pick because on paper, it doesn't seem to be very logical. And here's what I was wondering, too. I'm sure the Jets were trying to trade up. You just said it, Nick. They could have moved up to eight and stolen Adunze away from the Chicago Bears. The Falcons easily could have moved back to 10 and still gotten Penix and gotten extra picks, which is what the Jets ended up doing, moving from 10 to 11. Instead, they basically, apparently, before the draft, told all the teams, stop calling us. We're taking Michael Penix Jr. And I just can't understand the strategy there. Then at number nine, as we said, Rome Odunze, the wide receiver from Washington, goes to the Bears. Probably who the Jets would have taken if he had fallen to 10. I think it's all but a certainty that that's what would have happened. And then, of course, at 10, J.J. McCarthy, and at 11, Olufoshanu. So, Glenn, your thoughts on the top 10. I know you had plenty of thoughts about the Michael Penix Jr. selection.
Yeah, that Penix Jr. selection, even though, you know, they said on NFL Network, even before the draft started, that it was a possibility because the Falcons wanted to start the transition plan from Kirk Cousins already. Like, they wanted a backup in place to develop. And they even said it might be, they said it might be Penix, which I found surprising. I kind of thought it was a bluff. And they took him. And it's absolutely nuts to me. You're taking a guy who's already an older player with an entrenched starter who's probably going to be in place for at least 3 years. So you drafted a guy in the first round who is unlikely to see the field for the first few years, and then after he plays one season, you're going to have to make a decision on his fifth-year option when he's 28 years old and only 1 year under his belt. So really, just in a lot of ways, such a bizarre pick. The William, you know, everything, the first few picks kind of went exactly as we thought they would. You know, I know for me personally, Scott, when the Jets won that game against New England to close out the season, my first thought, it wasn't just a matter of the pit in my stomach because the Jets were going to be picking lower than they would have been. I just thought to myself, they're now going to land Drake May or Marvin Harrison. Now, I know there are some people who don't like Drake May. I've been a big fan of his since very early on last season. And I thought that for a quarterback as young as him, the way he was reading defenses and going through progressions, I thought he was a really advanced kid. And I just thought, I know you've got Sauce, and that'll be a fun matchup if and when he ever does face Marvin Harrison. But I just remember thinking to myself after that game, this is going to sting, not because of where the Jets won't be picking, but because of where New England will be. And they're either going to get a franchise quarterback or a receiver who's got Hall of Famer written all over him. So no surprise with Drake May or Marvin Harrison going where they went. The Joe Alt thing, of course, the speech that Jim Harbaugh gave at the combine or the owners meetings, whatever it was, talking about, you know, what group has to work well together for everyone else to succeed, but not rely on anyone else. And just going on and on about the O-line, and we know the O-lines he built at Michigan. So it really wasn't a surprise that they went O-line there. There was talk of the Giants, you know, wanting to get a quarterback, and maybe they did want one, but I don't know. I thought get Daniel Jones a weapon, because you've paid that guy so much money. The thought of benching him, listen, if they felt it was the right thing to do, but I think that, you know, they get a great player in Malik Nabers. Latham, as you mentioned, there were some who mocked him, you know, ahead of Joe Alt. But I think the Titans, I believe I'd mocked Alt to the Titans thinking he'd fall to there, but obviously he did not. The Adunze one stings a little bit. I mean, he's a guy who really, not just his play on the field, you watch him in interviews, you hear the way people describe him, and he just seems like that really high character guy. Like, you know, you want a guy like that in your locker room. And he, of course, goes to the Bears. McCarthy to the Vikings, you know, with the deals they made, again, you know, we talked about what a good job it was by Joe Douglas to get them to come up and grab him. And it really was. I mean, everyone knew the Vikings were going quarterback. They, you know, they armed up with multiple ones, and some people thought they would try to jump up into the top three and grab a quarterback there. Obviously, that didn't happen, but they still get. Listen, McCarthy's a guy who doesn't have the great stats, but when you look at what he did at Michigan and you extrapolate his numbers, and, you know, if he had the same number of pass attempts as the guys ahead of him, his numbers probably wouldn't have been that far off from what they did. He just happened to play at a school where they had so much talent up front and a head coach who just loves to run the ball that he didn't get that opportunity. But he's a winner. He won in high school. He's won in college. I think, if not mistaken, he went undefeated in high school and then wins a national championship with Michigan. So you got a guy who's won a lot of football games, and he's of all the rookies. And, this is nothing that isn't being said by every observer out there. He is by far entering the best situation and will have a chance to succeed right away.
Yeah, again, I mentioned the Jets being victims of circumstance, but really what it came down to it was this was one of the more quiet drafts that I can remember covering and being a fan of. And what I mean by quiet is there were so many rumors centering around every single team outside of the top two. And it was, oh, this team could trade down, this team could trade up. So many teams want to trade up for a receiver, And in reality, none of that came to fruition. And you saw consistently the best player available went to the team that was on the clock. And that really was the case in almost every single situation. And this is where I say, as much as people will look at the Fashanu pick as, oh, you didn't have to do this, you should have traded up, if no one is willing to trade up with you and everyone is comfortable with their pick, you've got to go with the best available player. And it just so happens that the Jets' best available player was Fashanu. I will always look at the Michael Penix draft as one of the more surprising ones that I have seen in my lifetime, just because the Falcons needed an edge rusher. They did not get an edge rusher in a pretty weak overall class. They could have traded out. They could have done a lot of different things. They didn't end up doing that. And you look at everything that went on in the top 10, and it really was a precursor going into the teens and 20s, because it allowed some really good contenders and some teams that are trying to contend to have some really damn good players just fall into their lap without having to make any sort of deals to get them.
Before we get to the rest of these picks, I just have to say, I just dug up this tweet that I had when people were talking about J.J. McCarthy possibly going to Washington at number two overall. I believe Tom Pelissero said there was some talk of that. This was from March 25th. I wrote, not buying this. McCarthy wasn't asked to do much at Michigan that stood out on tape. Not somebody with freaky traits. You're banking on coaching up. If I'm wrong, so be it. But I'm sticking with my Mac Jones overhyped smokescreen theory. Think McCarthy ultimately ends up going between 11 and 15. So I was really close. He went 10th. But I thought that he was going to go either to Minnesota, Denver, or Vegas, and he ended up going to Minnesota one pick earlier. So I will hang my hat on that J.J. McCarthy take. As we go through the rest of these picks, I'm going to run through them real quick, and then, guys, I want to get your thoughts on them before we talk about the best players available heading into day number two. The Denver Broncos were said to really like Bo Nix, but a lot of people thought they were considering trading down and getting him later on. Once all those quarterbacks went off the board early, I think Sean Payton decided not to mess around, went with Bo Nix at number 12. That Jarrett Stidham, Zach Wilson, Bo Nix training camp battle is going to be the stuff of legend coming up this summer. Brock Bowers, who apparently the Jets really were never in on, goes number 13 to the Raiders. That's interesting because they took Michael Mayer last year, and so Bowers and Mayer will be a two-headed tight end attack. Obviously, Bowers can be used in a variety of different ways, so he and Mayer can be on the field at the same time. They do still have Devontae Adams, and they've got the mustache, Gardner Minshew. So the Raiders may not be all that good, I don't know, but they will have an interesting offense for sure. The Saints grab Talaiisafuaga, the offensive lineman from Oregon State. Does he play guard or tackle in the NFL? We'll find out. Leatu Latu at number 15 is the first defensive player off the board in this draft, the edge rusher from UCLA. A lot of people felt he was hands down the best edge rusher in this class, but medical concerns dropped him down. Apparently, he got some good results that pushed him back up a little bit right before the draft, so he ends up going 15th. One guy that it went the opposite way for was Dallas Turner. A lot of people thought he could go number 8 to Atlanta, but he had some bad medicals down the stretch, so he actually dropped while Latu moved up a little bit, and Latu surpassed him. In between those two guys, Byron Murphy, the defensive tackle from the University of Texas, goes at number 16, hook 'em horns. At number 18, Amarius Mims, the offensive tackle from the University of Georgia, goes to the Cincinnati Bengals. Bengals get a guy that might be a little bit on the raw side because he hasn't played a ton of games, but he did play in the SEC at Georgia, and he's probably the freakiest athlete of all these offensive tackles when you consider his size and strength and speed, so a lot of upside there for Amarius Mims. Jared Verse, another talented edge rusher, goes to number 19 to the Rams. Rumors are that he fell a little bit because of character concerns. Who knows? The Steelers grab Troy Fotanu, the offensive lineman from Washington, at number 20. That seems like a good spot for him. Good chance he's going to be a guard in the NFL, but we'll find out if he plays guard or tackle. Chop Robinson, the edge rusher from Penn State, goes at 21 to the Dolphins. The Eagles get the player that I think was the steal of the first round, Quinion Mitchell, the cornerback out of Toledo. I thought he was the best defensive player in the draft. The Eagles, everybody thought if they wanted him, they'd have to move up. They didn't even have to do it. They get Quinion Mitchell, who is a straight-A student, a hell of a football player. He's got the traits. He's got the tape. The only real negative on him is that he played at Toledo. People are a little bit worried about the competition, but I'm not one of those people. I think he's going to be awesome with Philly. Brian Thomas Jr. is the next receiver off the board following Adunze going at 9. He goes at number 23 out of LSU to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Tony Khan, the owner of All Elite Wrestling, sitting in the draft room selling a fake wrestling injury with a neck brace because the other day he got pile-driven in storyline by the Young Bucks and Jack Perry. That, to me, was absolutely hilarious. At number 24, the Detroit Lions grabbed Terrion Arnold, the corner out of Alabama. Great value there. I know Daniel Jeremiah had him listed as his 9th best player in the draft. I don't know if I personally would have gone that high, but that's a really good pick at 24 for the Lions. The Packers grab Jordan Morgan, the offensive tackle out of Arizona, at number 25. He seems to be a good fit there. Walter Cherepinski of WalterFootball.com said on the show that there was a lot of buzz that there were teams in the 20s that liked Morgan. One of them did pull the trigger. Graham Barton, interior offensive lineman from Duke. He did play tackle there. He goes to Tampa at number 26. I think he's going to be a really good player. Nice pick there at 26. Darius Robinson, the edge rusher from Missouri, at number 27 goes to the Arizona Cardinals. Glenn, you've got a really funny story about Darius Robinson and his sack dance and something you asked him at the Senior Bowl. I'll let you get into that. This was a weird one. Xavier Worthy goes number 28, the wide receiver from Texas, Hook'em Horns, to the Chiefs. That's not the weird part. What's weird is that the Chiefs moved up from their spot at number 32 to 28 with the Bills. So the Bills traded down and let the Chiefs get a receiver. The Bills need a receiver, and they certainly shouldn't have wanted the Chiefs to get a receiver. So I'm not really sure what Brandon Bean is thinking there, but it wouldn't be the last time he'd move down in the first round. At 29, the Cowboys get Tyler Guyton, the offensive tackle from Oklahoma. Much like Amarius Mims, great athletic traits, big, strong, quick, good feet. The problem with him is Oklahoma, they run an offense that is very tough to evaluate in terms of looking at an offensive lineman and seeing how it would translate in the NFL. So he's going to be a bit of a project, but I like the value there at 29. Nate Wiggins, the corner from Clemson, goes to the Ravens at 30. The Ravens always find a way to pick somebody like this. They get a guy who's a really good player that probably should have gone higher and somehow falls into their lap. Happened with Wiggins here. Ricky Pearsall goes at number 31, the wide receiver from Florida, the 49ers. I thought he'd go in the second round, but this one broke the hearts of both Chris Schubert and Glenn over on the Jet Nation stream. They were very upset. They were hoping the Jets would find a way to get Pearsall tomorrow. And then Xavier Leggett goes at number 32 to the Panthers, the wide receiver from South Carolina. That's weird. The weird part is not that the Panthers took Xavier Leggett. The weird part is that the Bills traded back from 32 to 33 and let the Panthers take Xavier Leggett. The Bills badly need a receiver. I'm not sure why Brandon Bean keeps moving down and passing on the opportunity to take these receivers. He must not think all that much of them. That's the only thing that comes to my mind. So, Glenn, I'll let you go first. Your thoughts on all the picks past the Jets at number 11.
Yeah, I'll start with the Bills real quick, or that bottom, you know, trading back. What made that weird to me, and again, as you said, maybe they just don't like these guys, but I feel like those guys that went at the bottom of the round were sort of the better players in the next tier. Like, there was this, I think, well, I guess McConkey wouldn't count, but I'm thinking if you're going to try to replace Diggs, a guy like Leggett, you know, a big strong guy like that would have helped. You know, of course, Xavier Worthy's a different style of player, but I still feel like those are some of the better receivers that were left, and I think there's a little drop off after McConkey, and maybe that's who they take tomorrow, but even his style is a little bit different, but maybe they'll be comfortable with that. But there, you know, as always, there are some, you know, some interesting picks, some head scratchers, and which will leave some guys on the board that we feel are quality picks that are still available. But the Bo Nix pick, I think a lot of us saw that coming. I mentioned on our show a couple months ago, because there was a mock that came out that had the Jets getting Nix at 72. And I don't often discuss mocks, you know, because there's so many of them out there. But that was one thing that jumped out to me so much, and I kind of came on. I said on your show, Scott, that I thought a strong Senior Bowl would have gotten him into the top 10, but he didn't have a great Senior Bowl. You said just a minute ago that they took him there. They were hoping to take him in the second round, but the Falcons move really spooked him. Is that what you were saying, Nick?
Yeah, they panicked, and like a lot of teams did. They wanted to make sure they had their guy, and it really forced them to really make that pick at 12.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah. Now, the Bowers thing, of course, look, it's a little discouraging when you have a guy, you know, you have Daniel Jeremiah, who in my mind is one of the more respected guys out there. And when he's got Brock Bowers as his seventh-rated player and you hear the Jets aren't even interested in him, we like Mike Williams. We're excited about that addition, but outside of Garrett Wilson, you don't have a proven, reliable target. You've literally got one guy who you can look at and say, we expect him to be there every week, and he's produced for us. Beyond that, it's a lot of question marks at receiver. Again, Williams being one, and inexperienced guys, you know, the Jason Brownleys of the world. So Bowers, I thought, well, a lot of people refer to it as a luxury pick. To me, a luxury is a thing you don't need. Like, and you need another pass catcher. I mean, the Jets know they need a pass catcher because they tried to move up and didn't. But, you know, the Raiders got themselves a good player there. Fuaga to the Saints, I really like that. You know, we've talked about how he's got a little bit of versatility too, and the Saints really did need help on that line. The Colts going with Latu, Big gamble, you know, really, really significant injury history, but also some people feel the best pass rusher in this class that, you know, we'll find out in time, but he's definitely up there top two or three at the very worst. Seahawks get a really good player in Murphy. Turner, I thought, had a shot to go to Atlanta before they went ahead and took a quarterback. And Amarius Mims, immensely talented guy, big as a house, moves really well. But, you know, sometimes I worry about using a first-round pick on a guy with so little playing time. That's not to say he won't be a great one. I guess the way to say that, I wouldn't want to be the GM that has to make that decision. Like, you know, you need a tackle. Here's a guy who looks amazing on film, but he's only got 8 games under his belt. That's a little scary to me. Jared Verse, 19 to the Rams. In my opinion, I know you said you thought Kenyon Mitchell was the biggest deal. I thought Verse was the biggest deal. I thought he was a top 5 or 6 talent, best edge rusher in this class to me. The speed, the power, just the power itself, the way you see him. And they, you know, these are plays I've seen in the past, but they highlighted them tonight where he's grabbing offensive linemen and just driving them back into the pocket and using them to sack the quarterback. It's, you know, such a powerful guy. And when you lose Aaron Donald, you want to be able to recover from that as quickly as possible and not lose that, you know, obviously different positions, but it still gives you another guy who's going to be really tough for opposing defenses or offenses to deal with. Fatanu to the Steelers, that surprised me a little, only in that I thought Pittsburgh would go O-line, but I thought it would be interior. I thought that's where we'd see, JPJ or Frazier or somebody like that. Graham Barton, thought they would go in that spot. Chop Robinson, obviously, you know, super athletic to the Dolphins. He's going to be if he hits his potential, he'll be a nightmare for years to come. Mitchell, we talked about. Brian Thomas Jr., immensely talented guy who we talked about as a possibility for the Jets if they had dropped back a little further. They obviously didn't do that. Lions get it. And listen, if you need a defense in this draft and you were at the back of round one, this is the draft for you. I mean, the league doubled the record prior to tonight's draft. I heard Rich Eisen say it. The record for consecutive offensive players drafted to start the draft was 7, and tonight it was 14. So if you need a defense, this was the year to get it at the back of round one. Jordan Morgan, Graham Barton, more offensive line for the Bucs. Like I said, Barton I thought would have gone a little earlier. Darius Robinson, you mentioned, Scott. Yeah, just me being an idiot. Had a chance to talk to him in Mobile. Talked to him a little bit about being an underrated guy who really deserved credit as a potential first rounder. And that was all fine and good. And then as I was about to walk away, I'd watched a ton of his film. And for some reason, I couldn't remember. I just knew he had a celebration that he did after every sack. And he had a lot of sacks. And I'm playing it in my head. I'm like, what is that thing he would do with his hands? I can't remember. And I thought, well, I'll just ask him and ask him, is there anything symbolic? Is there any reason behind the celebration he does? And he was nice, but he did look at me like I was an idiot, and rightfully so. I said to him, I said, what does that mean, the thing you do after your sacks? And he just said, God, you know, it's just, and I remembered at that moment, he just does a prayer gesture. He puts his hands together like he's praying and bows his head. And I thought, this guy thinks that I don't know what that means. And he should think I don't know what that means, because like an idiot, I forgot that's what he does. And he didn't quite shake his head at me, but he did stare at me a little bit blankly. Like, does this guy not know what that means? So, but great player, 285, can play inside, can play outside, versatile, disruptive, and built like, you know, of all the guys down there in Mobile, he was the guy that stood out as like, this dude, if you were going to make a statue of a football player, this is what it would look like. Chiefs, of course, get Worthy, a guy we've been talking about for a couple of years, Scott, with you being a big Texas fan and him jumping out on film to me as a freshman. Tyler Guyton of the Cowboys. I mean, kind of weird. They get rid of Tyron Smith. You know, Guyton's been all right for a couple of years, but he does have an injury history, so there's some questions there. Nate Wiggins to the Ravens. Some people thought he was the best corner in this class. Either way, the Ravens, as you said, they always seem to have a really good player fall to them. And then Pearsall, that was, you know, I saw someone say the other day the Jets would get him, you know, the Jets should target him at 72. And I said, no, I said, Ricky Pearsall's a top 50 player. You're not getting him at 72. I thought maybe early round two. I didn't expect him to go in round one, but here we are. And then Xavier Legette, another receiver. So three good pass catchers come off the board at the back of the round. Leggett, there are some concerns that he's a one-year wonder, but I mean, his combination of size, power, his hand, some of the catches he made, watch him in the season opener against North Carolina. He was phenomenal. So I think the Panthers got themselves a really good player there.
Nick, your thoughts on the rest of round one?
Well, I just think that Howie Roseman's back is very, very sore because the amount of times this guy bows as one of the greatest GMs of our modern time is just absolutely incredible. No, but seriously, you know, Philadelphia needed a corner. They needed a corner, and they were able to get the best available one without having to give up a first or a second round pick. They have 2 second round picks now at 50 and 53. They're going to be able to address their offensive line. They'll be able to address their secondary or linebacker. I mean, he's as good as it gets when we talk about an executive in this league of understanding value and not overspending and really getting in the head of other executives. But there were plenty of winners as well in this draft. I thought, you know, the Rams were very good. I think the Steelers look at Troy Fontanu as an interior offensive lineman anyway. And he's got the versatility to do that as well. I thought a big loser today, if anything, were the Dallas Cowboys, because when you look at a team that is contending and they have needs at specific spots, the first thing that I thought of for Dallas was Graham Barton would be the perfect solution for the Cowboys because it would allow Tyler Smith to move to the outside at left tackle, and you now have an all-pro caliber player able and willing to move to the left side and replace Tyron Smith. But now with Guyton, it's so much more of a bigger question. I mean, this offensive line, we don't know how good they're going to be. And you look at all the other issues they have. They potentially need another receiver. They need more guys on the edge. They need linebackers. They have so many other problems that the Cowboys have. And the fact that they didn't take Barton and traded back was a real head scratcher to me. We mentioned before how Denver got spooked and panicked with Bo Nix. But ultimately, again, it comes down from everything that we saw in this first round. The defense won the day because you got some really talented top overall players falling to some of these contending teams. Terrion Arnold going to the Detroit Lions was an absolute steal as well. I don't think he's as good a player as Quinyon Mitchell, but he's still a phenomenal player itself. Kool-Aid McKinstry, I don't believe, was drafted at all in this first round, so he's going to make a second-round team very happy. Defenses and receivers, I thought there were going to be a lot more players that were drafted. There were not. It is going to make things very, very interesting. The one pick, though, that I think we need to talk about more is the 49ers one with Purcell, because they drafted him, and he's a very good player. But we know that they are shopping. We know that they are shopping their top two receivers. And to think of all the wide receiver needy teams that are going to be available with high second round picks, I look at the New England Patriots right now with the 34th, 35th overall pick. They could ship that to San Francisco for Brandon Ayuk, and that would make a lot of sense to kick off day two of the draft, simply because the Patriots need him. They have the money to give him the contract he wants, and the 49ers want to be able to get some good draft capital to improve their roster. They're going to have needs along the offensive line. You look at Jackson Powers Johnson as a particular player that could be of interest. If Ayuk is able to go to New England for the 34th, 34th, 5th pick, and the 49ers make do with Jackson Powers Johnson, that's a pretty damn good haul. You know, you get Purcell and then JPJ as quality players. It's certainly something to take a look at going into day two.
Speaking of day two, really quickly, let's go over some of the best players that are still available. A couple of these guys are guys that the Jets are probably not going to pick, so I'm not going to worry about cornerbacks or anything like that, but they could go with Adonai Mitchell. We've talked about the character flags in terms of how he's failed to manage his type 1 diabetes, and when he doesn't do that, he becomes a problem to deal with. There are teams that may not want to deal with a high-maintenance player like that, but now that he's fallen into the second round, his combination of athleticism and hands and body control and pure talent could be enough to tempt somebody. Ladd McConkey, the wide receiver out of Georgia, we talked about him before. He's probably going to be the top receiver on a lot of teams' boards. I'm curious to see if he slips a little, if the Jets are able to find a way to get him. Jackson Powers Johnson, the center from Oregon, I don't think he's going to be in play for the Jets now that they went out and got Olufoshanu in the first round. Zach Frazier, the center from West Virginia, I don't think he's a fit for the Jets anyway. Braden Fisk, the defensive tackle from Florida State, he's a guy that you could keep your eye on. I doubt the Jets are going to take him if they trade up into the second round, but if he somehow slides into the third, maybe. Peyton Wilson, the linebacker from NC State, another guy to keep your eye on. If he was to slide into the third round, the Jets don't move up. But another guy that they could move up to try and get, a receiver, Keon Coleman, the wide receiver out of Florida State. At one point, a lot of people thought he would be in the mix to be the third receiver taken. They thought he'd be right in there with Roma Dunze. That didn't happen. He fell. Now he's going to go in the second or third round, most likely. Guy that Glenn and I both really like. I would be ecstatic if the Jets could land him. The Yak God, Malachi Corley, the wide receiver out of Western Kentucky. Still a little raw with his routes, and he didn't play the best competition because he was at Western Kentucky. But when that guy has the ball in his hands, he can make magic happen. I've said many times he reminds me a little bit of Brandon Ayuk when Brandon Ayuk was at Arizona State. We saw some film of Brandon Ayuk tonight, by the way, because they showed Jaden Daniels throwing him a pass when the two of them played at Arizona State. That's how long Jaden Daniels was in college. It's kind of crazy. Couple of other players, Roman Wilson, the wide receiver from Michigan, Jalen Polk, the wide receiver from Washington, who's not named Roman Dunze, although actually Jalen McMillan is a third receiver who could get drafted at some point. Javon Bullard and Cole Bishop, two safeties, Jaden Hicks, another one, Bo Braid. Those are all guys that the Jets could be looking at. Right now, they are very thin at safety. It's easily the weakest position on their defense. And then Troy Franklin, the wide receiver from Oregon, is another name to watch. The only thing I worry about with him is he has such a thin frame. It's going to be tough for him in the NFL. And Devontae Walker, the wide receiver from North Carolina. Glenn, I know that he kind of disappointed you when you went and saw him at the Senior Bowl. So, Glenn, your thoughts, some of the players that you like heading into day number two. Some of them might be the same as the ones that I said, and there could be others that maybe I didn't mention.
Yeah, there's guys, as you said, Scott, there's guys that are really good, but the Jets won't really have any interest in or won't be in a position to take, because I don't see them being able to get to the top of the second round where a guy like Johnny Newton would go. And there is a needed tackle, but I think first and foremost, I think they're going to stay on the offensive side of the ball. But a guy like Jackson Powers Johnson, loved him in Mobile. I thought he was he only practiced the first day, but you know, it's only really three full practices. I would have no problem saying if you put his day of practice against anybody else down there, he may have been the best player in Mobile. AD Mitchell, you mentioned there are some concerns there. Ladd McConkey, of all the receivers on the board right now, he'd probably be my favorite. Ridiculously quick feet, can play inside, can play outside. Much better player than I gave him credit for, honestly, when I first started watching him. Just kind of thought he was another guy on a loaded Georgia team where, you know, nobody could double anyone, and he was getting, you know, making plays that way. But he really is a phenomenal player. Zach Frazier, again, another really good player, but are the Jets going to go O-line twice this early? I really don't see that happening. But Jalen Polk, who you mentioned, you know, it really, that whole Washington offense, it was like a football circus, like the leaping, contorted, contested catches that these guys were making. It wasn't just Roma Dunze. Jalen Polk was doing a lot of the same stuff. So if they do look to go to receiver, he's a guy they could look at, and you would have to imagine with the time they spent talking to watching Odunze, I'm sure they got a pretty good look at Polk as well. Cooper Beebe is a guy I mentioned very early in the season as a potential second rounder. But again, do you go O-line twice? Probably not. I have the same concerns as you with Franklin. Troy Franklin, Oregon, very explosive guy, make plays down the field. But I'm not sure how he's going to deal with press coverage in the NFL as a smaller guy and being able to get yards after the catch. He'll probably struggle in that area. Mike Sainis, I only have to mention Mike Sainis real because he's one of my favorite guys in this class. I do not see the Jets taking a corner. But man, Mike Sainis out of Michigan can play the slot, can play the outside, converted wide receiver, really aggressive guy.
And from the first time I saw him play, I was like, I think this guy can be special. And he's had himself a really nice career at Michigan. It's one of those where I don't see a path to him being a Jet, but man, do I wish that guy was going to be a Jet. Ben Sinnott's an interesting one because, well, I guess not. Not one the Jets would be interested in, because I felt like he was a guy you look at if you like Brock Bowers, but you can't get Brock Bowers. If the Jets didn't like Bowers, they're probably not going to like Sinnott. Just a slightly less talented guy, but does a lot of the same stuff. Lines up at H-back, lines up in the slot, lines up at tight end. Tough guy to bring down, explosive out of the blocks. So he's a guy that I thought would be on their mind if Bowers wasn't, but apparently that won't be the case. Corley, you mentioned Chris Jenkins Jr. I mean, that'd be, you know, the legacy pick, right? There is a need, like I said, at DT to get a young guy who's more than just a one-year deal, which is what everybody other than Quinn and Williams seems to be. If the Jets wanted a long-term guy there, then they could look at him. Peyton Wilson, another one kind of in that Sainestrill category, a guy that I've been watching for a few years now. But again, the injury history and age. His athleticism at linebacker and his ability to diagnose plays, I think whoever gets him is going to be very happy to add him to their defense. Brayden Fisk, love his motor. Everybody loves his motor. It's the first thing everyone mentions about him. But you do see him sometimes struggle with when guys get into his chest a little bit because he does have shorter arms. And if he doesn't win at the point of attack, he does have a little bit of a hard time. That don't get me wrong, though. I still think he's going to be a very good player who's going to make a lot of plays at the pro level. And I think in terms of, you know, realistic second-round guys, you mentioned Cole Bishop. He's another one. There's a couple safeties in the class I really like. And Tez Walker, yes, he had some drops in Mobile, but really just an immensely talented guy who made a lot of big plays in college. And that would probably wrap up like the realistic round two type guys. And I do think it's going to be a receiver in that spot. So we'll have to, and again, this is all just assuming they trade up, because I really do think they will. And some of those guys are, you know, second, third round types. And there's still, you know, we've only got one round out of the way. So in a deep class, there's still a lot of talent to be had.
Yeah, I got to be honest. I think the only thing really worth talking about, at least at this point, is the receiving corps, because we can talk about defense all we want, but I find it very, very hard to believe that the Jets will take an interior defensive lineman before they address the receiving corps. And I think when you look at the opportunities that are going to be available, Keon Coleman is probably the best overall bet that could potentially fall as far as the third round. I thought originally he was probably one of my favorite receivers of the entire draft class. He didn't really test very well. There's been a lot of other questions going along with him. He is a phenomenal story, though. You know, mother, single mother of five, had to get help pretty much all his life to sort of stay on the right path. Wanted to go to LSU. LSU didn't want him. So he went to Michigan State, then transferred to FSU. And with the Seminoles, he had that 3-touchdown game this past year to open up the college football season. He is an unbelievable story. Great character kid that I think would fit the Jets very, very well if they can trade to the later portions of round two. The interesting thing, of course, will be the fact that a lot of the teams that were potentially wide receiver needy, those late, you know, the Bills, the Chiefs, the 49ers, those teams have addressed that position. So you have to think that they won't be as aggressive to get a receiver in the later second round. So you have to think that if there's going to be players available, the Jets will be able to cut a deal for a late second round pick, maybe even potentially keeping that third rounder. We mentioned Chris Jenkins already. I think ultimately, in my original mock, I had the Jets trading up for a receiver in the later second round. I had somewhere around, I'm trying to remember, I had somewhere in like that late 50, early 60 mark, and then taking Chris Jenkins in round three. All of that makes a lot of sense. Coleman's probably the top guy, but Malachi Corley, a really good fit with Aaron Rodgers. Jalen Polk, as you said, very, very good fit with Aaron because he can go up and get those deep balls. Really, it's just going to come down to their overall preference and how aggressive they are willing to be, because there are going to be teams that are willing to trade back. I look at the Philadelphia Eagles as one of them with a 50th and 53rd overall pick. I don't think they're going to make both selections in this draft, particularly because they don't have a third round pick anymore. It's certainly a thought process to have tomorrow. Take a look at the teams that could potentially be trade down partner with the Jets. But I think it is a foregone conclusion, 90% sure that the Jets are going to trade up. And then when they trade up, it will be for a wide receiver.
Gentlemen, before we run, I just wanted to read something from Joe Filippi, who is a huge Penn State guy. He's also a big Jets fan. If you don't know him, his handle on Twitter is at PSUJoe11. He's such a hardcore Penn State fan that until Christian Hackenberg actually got released, he was still swearing up and down that Hackenberg was going to be the Jets version of John Elway. But anyway, I digress. Here's what Joe had to say to me after the Jets picked Olufoshanu. Obviously, I love the pick. Excellent player, consistent, great pass protector, good run blocker, even better human being with great character. Teammates all love him, so do the coaches. I'd have been very happy with somebody like Brock Bowers or a wide receiver because obviously the Jets need somebody that can make plays like that. But picking up additional picks and still getting Olufoshanu while maintaining the flexibility to trade back into the second round to get a receiver was huge. He reminds me a little bit of DeBrickashaw Ferguson, both as a player and as a person. Guess I know what my next jersey purchase will be. So I thought that was a really good way to cap off the show, to read you what Joe had to say. Ultimately, when it comes down to it, if he can be somebody like DeBrickashaw Ferguson, both on and off the field for the next 10 years, then the Jets and Jets fans will obviously be very happy with Olufoshanu. Nick Faria, who covers the Jets for Athlon Sports and also the NFL in general for Pro Football Network, and Glenn Naughton, the editor over at Jet Nation. Guys, thanks so much for coming on. Really appreciate it. We will talk about day number two tomorrow. We'll be back to cover that. In the meantime, make sure that you check out everything that Glenn is doing over at JetNation.com and follow him on Twitter as well. Check out everything Nick is writing over at Athlon Sports and at Pro Football Network. And follow him on Twitter. Check out everything we're doing at PlayLikeAJet.com and the Play Like a Jet YouTube channel. By the time you hear this, our film review, courtesy of the Thunder from Down Under, Luke Grant, of Olufoshanu should be up on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/playlikeajet. So watch that video, watch all the rest of our videos, and subscribe if you haven't already. Visit our store, teepublic.com, that's teepublic.com, and be sure to give us a 5-star review for the podcast on iTunes if you haven't done that already. Easy way to help out the show if you like what we're doing. Doesn't take you much time, doesn't cost you any money, but it goes a long way to help us out. So if you could go ahead and do that for us, we'd be quite grateful. And for the latest and greatest in New York Jets podcasts and content, you know where to go. That's Play Like a Jet Digital and PlayLikeAJet.com.